This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Aftershock Central Podcast, a brand new episode for 2018. And yes, it's true. I'm back. I have returned from my time travels to bring you glad tidings. And Ronnie's not here, but our new guest co-host, I guess you're not a guest anymore, are you? You're like a permanent thing.
Yeah, I'm like Travis come lately, but you know, like I don't know. Ronnie kind of welcomed me like pretty openly. He was like, "Hey, you're on the podcast." I'm like, "Oh, okay, yeah." But, you know, that's cool, I guess. So I wouldn't plan on that, but yeah, let's do it.
Great. Oh yeah, I still gotta put you give you access on the website. Anyways,
Travis, oh, got it, my friend.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, but you're not listed on any podcasts yet. I gotta change that.
Yeah, I've only done two so far, so and not very many episodes of those. So
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Did you have a good New Year's?
Yeah, no, it was pretty low key.
Nice.
Yeah. Not to be a downer, but my cat just passed away last week.
I saw that.
So we kept it, you know, a little bit low key for New Year's. The day before, we had gone out with our good friends, and we were all drinking Colt 45.
No, you weren't. Are you serious?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, my cat's Billy D. Williams and Billy D. Williams.
Oh my God.
This episode of Aftershock Central brought to you by Colt 45. Yeah, I know. We did a little salute, but for New Year's, we kept it pretty chill. Just watched some movies at home with friends. So,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, how about you, dude?
We didn't do anything. The kids were not at home, so it's just my wife and I. And she's like, "Do you want to go somewhere?" And I was like, "We can." Well, actually, no, I asked her. I was like, "Do you want to go somewhere?" She's like, "Yeah, we can go somewhere." But I kind of figured that she didn't want to go anywhere. So the day of, she's like, "You still want to go somewhere?" I was like, "We can stay home." She's like, "Yeah, that's probably a better idea." She's like, "If there's going to be cops out, people are going to be drunk, we'll just hang out at home." So that's what we did. I got some of the old bubbly, drank some bubbly on New Year's Eve, watched the ball drop, and that's it.
Ah, very nice. Very
yeah, it was
nice.
Good.
Well, yeah, did you watch a movie or anything?
Nope. Well, I mean, I watched Die Hard. It's a family tradition.
Okay.
But that's it.
Okay. What are your thoughts on Die Harder? Because I like to pull for Die Harder. It's also a Christmas movie.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's got Dennis Franz. It's pretty decent.
It's fine. It's not the best of the series. I would say they go in release order from best to worst. I don't know. Three's not bad, dude, actually.
With a Vengeance is number two, I would
yeah,
say.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Sam Jackson and Jeremy Irons.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one like takes the edge, but Die Harder is still pretty legit.
It's better than the new ones.
Thanks for tuning in to Die Hard Central Podcast. All Die Hard, all the time.
Let's not talk about Die Hard anymore. Let's talk about some comics. Yeah. We didn't have it. Well, we had an episode last week, but it wasn't about new books because Nick and I took over the podcast. So we're going to talk about last week's books first, and then we'll talk about this week's books. So last week we had, let's kick off with Fujitsu number 4. And I'll do the creator roll call. We've got, writer is Jay Nitz, and the art is by Wesley St. Clair. Colors by Maria Santalola, and letters by a guy that you may know, Dave Sharp.
Ah, yes.
The infamous Dave Sharp. So you wanna give us a little nutshell of this issue?
Yeah, let's do it, man. Okay, so Fujitsu battles Wadlow in a giant mech of extra-dimensional origin. He traps Wadlow in a temporal structure loop and secretly shoots himself into the White House inside a missile, where he rescues his ex-girlfriend from Wadlow's henchmen. Wadlow catches up to them in Fu's old headquarters, the Gateway of the West, and the attack reveals to Fu the equation for quantum kung fu in the stolen fortune teller's books.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good nutshell.
Yes, it took a couple of reads.
I'm sure it did. I don't normally read reviews of books, but I've been curious about what people say about this book because Ronnie and I really enjoy it, and we usually do like a really quick review of this because it almost feels like there's not a lot of substance, but there is a lot going on in the book itself. And I think it just depends on how you read it, what you get out of this particular book. Because I think it's very easy to say that the book just doesn't make sense, so it's not very good. And I think people that say that don't understand what is going on in the book, and that's why they tend to not enjoy it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
Because it's very out there, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely out there. And, you know, like just a couple things spring to mind, one of which is, in a way, I think you guys and maybe a lot of people kind of measure it with a different ruler than you might, you know, other comics, you know, other Aftershock comics. And that may harken to, and I'll give credit here to Paul, who makes this argument a lot, that, like, what is it trying to do?
Yep.
And judging it on what it's trying to be and not what you want it to be.
Yep.
And certainly it comes across certainly in a very, you know, wacky, you know, timey-wimey, nonsensical way. You know, and that's fine. You know, I'm curious how much like it actually is trying to say, you know, because it kind of is really doing some stuff, setting stuff up. But how serious does it take kind of the story threads that they have sewn?
Well, I don't think very seriously at all. I think what I like about Fujitsu is it's not so much, God, this is really weird for me to say, because I usually like books that are about characters, and it's almost like this book is not at all about the characters. It's about the concepts that the characters represent. Because there's a lot of, like, weird, like, scientific concepts that get thrown all over the book. That when you read them, it's just like, okay, they're just putting a bunch of big words together and trying to make something out of it. But I don't think that's the case at all. Because a lot of these concepts are, like, really, I don't know how to say it, but, like, they're really in-depth, like, either scientific or philosophical concepts that somehow are manifesting into this weird, like, ancient, I don't know, kung fu master kid, super genius. I don't even know. You know, like, it's so hard to describe this book because there's so much being thrown at you at one time, that it makes it easy to just kind of brush it off as nonsense. And I don't think it's that at all. Matter of fact, it reminds me of one of my favorite courses in college. I was an English major in college, and one of my favorite courses was postmodern literature. And, it's very much like a postmodern book, because everything fits together, but in a very non-conventional way. And I think I noticed that a lot in this particular issue, because if you feel differently, let me know, but this is not the same foo that we've had in previous issues. The foo in this issue is the foo that popped out of the portal and helped the other foo last issue. This is the alternate foo.
You're talking about at the end of the
issue. Then I'm talking about this, most of this issue, yeah.
Yeah, well, like the end of last issue, because I was wondering about that too, right? Because, I mean, A, he's got the quantum kung fu, right?
Yep.
So, like, in generality, let's assume that enables time travel, yes? Like time travel and or being in the same place at the same, or different places at the same time.
Correct.
But it, from a story perspective, time travel. And, yes, last issue, time fu, right? Like,
yep.
Like, popped out of the portal. Okay, but I thought he was wearing a different costume, all right? Because last issue, he was Shaolin Lad, right? And he was dressed up like he is in the end of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But he's fighting with Captain Golden Arm, Johnny Unitas.
Yep.
So I interpret that as actually having occurred in the past.
Yes.
And, I mean, part of that, I guess, really gets to how much they're trying to respect you know, time travel paradox and like doing work on time travel stories versus just, you know, kind of doing like writing your own rules and assuming nobody's going to think about it too hard.
Well, but the thing is, it's not really time travel. That's why it's the quantum kung fu. It's not time travel. It's the same person in two different states.
Yes, but I assume that, I mean, he's time fu, right? Like, sure. So he's traveling through time. But, I mean, beyond that, though, what I was curious about is, let's say that the Wadlow scene with Golden Arm and Shaolin Lad is happening in the past because mm-hmm. it's in, like, newsprint style.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who appears to come back from the past in that is wearing a different costume. He's, like, in an all-white costume. And I think he appears to have a splinter of the atomic katana, mm-hmm. like, sticking out of his chest.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think he might get there in the next issue as far as how he travels back into time to show up in that showdown. But I don't know if he's going right there right now, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying. That's fine. I'm just not sold that it's a time travel thing. I think the only reason that he referred to this other foo as time foo is that he hadn't discovered the quantum foo yet. So he wouldn't know that it really is just himself in a different physical state, right? So the easiest solution for him to be would be just to say, hey, that's me from the future. Come back to help myself or whatever. You see what I'm saying? And the fact that these foos have different outfits or whatever, it doesn't bother me either. Because if this is all about the quantum kung fu, then ultimately these are all the same people. It's just like a split. It's like a multiverse thing. You see what I'm saying? So like they're all existing in these different states at the same time. Where like there might be variations in between each one based on like branching effects in a particular part of time and space. So it's not so much like a time travel, but a multiverse thing.
Multiverse. Okay.
Yeah.
That is possible. That is a different reading than kind of what I was looking at for this story, because I think also like a pretty big chunk of what they put in this issue kind of speaks to the prophecies and, you know, the fortune tellers, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Because they've been setting that up as well. P.T. Barnum's fortune tellers have this book that foretells Wadlow's showdown with, you know, the two Shaolin lads or whatever, the two Fujitsus,
mm-hmm.
that they referenced an issue or two ago. But, you know, this issue is interesting because it kind of suggests, like Fu basically says point blank that it's, like, BS and, you know, what's not, like, total vagaries are, like, demonstrably false.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing it does contain is, like, the formula, like the elusive formula for quantum fu,
yep,
that he's been trying for 50 years. You know, like so the same thing that drove Wadlow to a showdown, like give fu the powers that he has been, you know, grasping at. I'm looking at that, you know, like my assumption is that maybe Fu has something to do with the creation of the book and went back in time to, you know, put it at Wadlow's disposal.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that interpretation. If I stick with the whole quantum kung fu thing, to me, it's more like a self-fulfilling prophecy, this book, P.T. Barnum's book. Because if we have this multiverse, okay, of the same people living in all these different states, and like each one branches off in its own, like, quote unquote reality, as events change and happen, then to me it seems possible that had they not seen the book, some of these things would not be happening. Because, like, all the stuff that Wadlow plans, like, when he plans, the ultimate battle at the Arch in St. Louis, like, he knows that that's where he needs to go because that's what's in the book. Well, what if he didn't have the book? He wouldn't know that that's where he needs to go. So it's like the whole thing with Schrodinger's cat, right? Like, the cat is either, it's alive or it's dead. And you don't know which one it is until you open the box and you see the cat. right? And to me, like, this book of prophecy is kind of that way. Like, they could be battling at the arch or they could not. But because Wadlow's got the book, he's opened the box, and what he sees in the box is that he needs to go to the arch.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of blowing my mind a little. You know, I think I'll be interested in the next issue which way they go with it, mm-hmm. you know, as far as explanations, because it's got to lean one way or the other,
sure.
right?
Sure. Yeah, no, for sure. I just think it's important that for people that are dismissing this book as just a bunch of silly shit put together, I think there's way more depth than those people are giving the book credit for. But with that said,
yeah.
the book is a shit ton of fun. I mean, the dude's running around in a giant Voltron mech, you know, fighting a 10-foot tall 100-year-old dude who has taken over the world with this magic sword. You know, like, yeah, on the surface, it's silly shit. But I think this book is a lot more than that.
So you want to tamo it or?
Yeah, let's tamo it up.
Actually, I don't have tamos prepared, so we can just rate it and we'll reapproach tamos.
You don't have tamos prepared? What is wrong with you? This was your idea.
It was my idea. Yeah. All right. Okay.
No, that's fine. You don't need to tamo. You don't need to tamo. It's fine. I can tamo it.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5 rat farts tamos.
Nice. Okay. I will go, I'll also go 4 out of 5. I don't know. Giant Jaeger tamos.
Nice. I like it. Next up, we got Black Eyed Kids. This is the final issue. Bow, bow,
bow. Okay, you know, arguable. Yeah, like I read maybe what Ronnie sent over. That I mean, at the end of the issue, it says end of season one, right?
All right, we're gonna get to that. Get to that. Matter of fact, it's very important we get to it because this very podcast was mentioned at the end of the issue. Ah, see, I just blew your mind again.
Oh, no, I was aware, yeah. Oh,
okay, good. Just making sure. All right, so Black Eyed Kids number 15. It's written by Joe Pruitt, art by Simon Kudransky, colors by Guy Major, and letters by Marshall Dillon. Marshall Dillon is like the Dave Sharp of Aftershock. All right, so give me a nutshell recap on this one.
Okay, so in the past, Gus recently moved to a weird camp that seems to worship the Black Eyed Kids. Gus's wife is drinking the Kool-Aid, and Gus plans to escape with his daughter and also Ricky and Jessica. The black-eyed kids arrive and change his daughter, who proceeds to kill the mother, and the black-eyed kids surround Gus and the others. In the present, the master has kept Jim alive and seems to have plans for his daughter. Meanwhile, Jim's girlfriend and her friends plan to avenge him.
Nice. All right, so where do I start, man? Where do I start? I gotta say, I'm gonna start off with art, actually, and I don't normally do this. And I know that this is the last issue, and again, we'll talk about it at the end. But I feel like the art in this issue was not as strong as in previous ones. And I'm not sure the reasoning for that, but it seems a little bit more rushed than the other stuff. And I know that Simon's busy. I think he's doing one of the Hard Case Crimes books for, who does that? Titan Comics, maybe? So I know he's busy doing that. And I think he's done some covers for Marvel, I want to say, recently. But still, I would have, with this being the final issue, I would have liked for the art to seem a little more polished than it did. With that said, I think there was a lot of questions that we've been asking for the past 15 issues that were answered. And I really dug the fact that we finally get to see Gus in the past, and I mean pretty much everybody's connected. We actually finally get to see that, because we had like hints here and there in conversation, but never saw everything that happened that led Gus to leave and why these people are important to the master.
Yeah, I agree that I think there's like a big step forward in terms of what they show you in this issue. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a continuation of what they set up in the previous issue.
Yep.
With the camp and whatnot, like they hinted at the last issue, and now you're there. And I mean, you learn a lot, but I feel like as many things as you learn, I've got as many questions about, you know, like what's going on. And I think it would be disappointing if they left off the story here. I mean, it really blows it so much more wide open than a smaller story that's just about these weird monsters that you don't know much about. And they just seem to be showing up, you know. And I feel like it's hitting its stride right now, you know. Like, it's been a strong series, but I feel like in terms of telling the bigger story, what they've gotten to in recent issues, like that was kind of put on the back burner, to create the mood. Like, it's a lot more of a cinematic, naturalistic story, you know, and they're not cramming world building and exposition into like the first issue, you know?
Yep.
So we're getting there now, but it's only like a tiny hint. So if you're cracking open the world this much, one would hope that it would continue. Otherwise, you know, like, you should have just kept it small.
Yeah. No, that's true. And I mean, the way it ends, it says end of season one, right? So the hope is, and I guess we'll get to that before we tamo the book up, but the hope is that the trades will do well enough where, you know, Aftershock can warrant for the book to continue. And I know that Ronnie and myself and Jack have really enjoyed this book since it first launched, and we've talked it up to a lot of people. Not just Aftershock people, but like people that never even picked up an Aftershock book, for them to give this book a shot. And I think for the most part, those people have continued reading the book. There's a few that didn't, and that's fine. But I think for the most part, those people have continued. And, you know, it's a little sad when a book goes away because maybe it doesn't do as well sales-wise. In particular, just like you said, when you really start feeling like the story is just now kicking off, right? Because it's almost like the first 15 issues have been almost like setup of learning who these people are and what this world's about. And with the events of issue 15, I think all that's kind of blown wide open. And things could get really interesting with the way that things end with Meredith at the end, where she's all like, you know, we're going to get together and we're going to get these mother effers pretty much. And I dug that. I think it was a good way to end the series if it doesn't come back. But at the same time, if it does come back, there's so much more that could be explored. And that's really exciting.
Word. Yeah. And jumping on that, from a few different angles, you know, I was reading the previous issue to prepare for the podcast.
Yeah.
And I happened to notice a page that pretty much said in no uncertain term that the Black Eyed Kids exists in the same universe as Baby Teeth.
Yes. And how'd you come up on that? What was the actual quote? Do you have it with you?
God, I erased it from my iPad, but they reference, something about a baby whose name is Clark and he was recently born in Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me pull it up on Twitter, actually. I think I could, that's kind of the bullet points of it.
Yeah. I was trying to find the tweet.
But no, I mean, like, come on, dude, that's a few different points of, you know, coincidence. But my point is, like, Baby Teeth is killing it right now, right?
Yeah.
So what if there was space for them in 10 issues or 20 issues for, you know, Black Eyed Kids to – or a Black Eyed Kid to show up and kind of, I don't know, build some interest, cross-pollinate, synergy, et cetera?
Yeah, I think that'd be really smart. I found the page. The master says there was a birth, and he said, yes, a boy child, and named him Clark. I don't care what this idiotic human vessel named him. I know his true name. Where is he presently? Salt Lake City. Who else knows besides us? Unknown. Is he protected? No. Which, of course, now we know that's not true, because now they are protected. Because my assumption would be this scene happens at the birth of Clark, right? Right, immediately after, before the cult finds Sadie.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's interesting because, I mean, Baby Teeth is like selling gangbusters for Aftershock. I'm pretty sure it remains their top selling book. And I think with good reason, because I think for me, it's my top 10 of anything that I'm reading right now. I love Donny Cates, and I think from the conversation, so I couldn't make the interview with Zach Thompson a couple weeks ago. But between when Ronnie talked to Donnie and when he talked to Zach, it really seems like Donnie is very much involved in developing, like kind of where Aftershock is going. And of course it's not like a shared universe per se, but he has a lot of say there, and he's developing some talent there and developing some stories. And to have a book like Black Eyed Kids that is really fascinating, but unfortunately not doing as well, tie in with Baby Teeth, maybe it'll give some people a reason to go and pick this up. If it does show up, if some of these characters do show up in Baby Teeth, and I think that'd be really, really awesome.
Yeah, dude, that would be totally awesome. But so let's kind of like, do you want to maybe look at, you know, what's kind of going on as far as we understand the Black Eyed Kids storyline right now?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think it's been kind of a big thing. We tossed a few things around, like brain parasite alien things, demon things. I think the cult has been key in the whole series from the first issue. We just didn't know, like, what the philosophy of the cult was. And we still kind of don't, but it's pretty obvious that the cult is there so that there's children there for... I'm just going to go ahead and assume now, like, demonic entities to take over these bodies.
Yes, and I'm going to go a step further there, because I feel like they referenced in the last issue or two when the Master was talking, basically, like, specific children.
Mm-hmm.
He used the word descendants.
Yep.
I think in the last issue. So that, to me, suggests that there's, like, some kind of magic ritual or something, like certain descendants of someone, TBD, who, if turned into black-eyed kids as children, will usher in, like, the new black-eyed kid world.
Well, and, you know, we didn't get confirmation one way or the other whether there is the Baby Teeth tie-in. But if there is, you also see the same thing in that book. Matter of fact, in the issue that we're going to talk about today, there's a whole thing about descendancy, that I want to talk about. So yeah, it's very possible. Like, there's gotta be a reason why these kids are being chosen, right? And it's also important that they are kids, because they're, what was that he said? Something about innocence, but there was something else. There's a reason that they're choosing children.
What I got out of it was something to the effect of that adult bodies are tainted.
Yep.
And that children are pure both mentally and physically.
Yeah, yeah. I just found the page. Yep, that's exactly what he says. Which, I mean, makes sense. I mean, that's like stuff like that's in the Bible too, right? You know, like
being, well, it's
like,
also classic like horror fare, right? It's
sure.
Like, and again, it's in Baby Teeth as well, that like they want pure whatever, food, blood, you know, like it, I mean, it's odd. There's something about evil in terms of tropes that it has to feed on pure, you know,
mm-hmm.
like a predator has to kill prey. Like, it can only subside on something that is like pure that's being ruined.
Yep. Actually, that's funny. This exact thing showed up in a show that I watched. Do you watch Travelers on Netflix?
No, I haven't seen
Oh
it.
My god. Alright, if you like time travel stuff, you're gonna love the show. It's freaking fantastic. It's almost like, what was it? 12 Monkeys? But a million times better. And I'm talking about 12 Monkeys the show, not the movie.
I assumed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But in Travelers, so there's time travel, but they can't send the bodies back. They send the consciousness back in time. And they always travel into a host, that's about to die. So they get transferred at the moment of death. So that way their consciousness leaves and then the traveler's consciousness goes into the body of this person. And some, there are times where there's a glitch and there's going to be like a remnant of the old consciousness. But it's always adults. It's never children. But what's interesting is there's an entity that runs this whole program, and it can travel, it can send its consciousness back in time, but only to children. Because the same exact reason, children are pure and undamaged, and their brains haven't developed enough consciousness, to reject it. And I wonder if some of that isn't why they're able to get here, because since these are children, and their brain isn't fully formed, they're more malleable to whatever methods these beings use to control, the human body.
Yeah, word. Maybe it's like, being John Malkovich, you know.
Yes.
Like, there's probably a lot, it's like, a malleable thing for you to kind of pour your, influence into.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. What else do you want to talk about this book?
Well, I mean, I kind of was thinking about certain, you know, elements of, the, like, present day storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to the extent that it matters, like, if they're going to continue the story. But, you know, like, you know, he's keeping Jim alive, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I guess, for some reason, he seems to be interested in Jim's daughter. Now, mm-hmm. is he more interested in Jim's daughter, even though he's, like, totally, like blowing smoke up Michael's ass about, like, oh, like, hey, you're, like, my number one guy right now, like, I got this job opening, and, like, you're the one, and as soon as, like, his sister rolls up, like, he's like, oh, no, I never liked that guy, he sucks. right, so, like, I, you know, there's that, but I guess maybe that's not unwarranted, given that Michael himself has not been a loyal subject, you know? Like, he seems to favor Michael, but he's already betrayed him at least once,
mm-hmm.
and I think he's aware of that, you know? He, like, whatever, shot his dad in the last issue, and the dad didn't even die. So maybe, I don't know, the master thinks he can do better? I don't know, why is he so interested in the sister? Is she also one of the descendants, you know? Like does she have to be turned for a magic-type reason?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like she would be... She's got to be important for the ultimate goal. Which, I mean, we don't really know what the ultimate goal is even now, right? I mean, he keeps saying that he just wants to, like, make the human race extinct pretty much. But we don't know, like, why. Why do you want to make it extinct? Like, there's got to be a reason. And that hasn't been discussed. But ultimately, there has to be something that she possesses that is able to forward that goal. And the only reason he's keeping... Michael alive is to get to the sister, because I mean they try to turn the sister a couple times and it failed.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, maybe there's a reason for that as well.
There's something about her, yeah, but yeah, perhaps we shall see.
Maybe she's also chosen to bring another Antichrist to the world. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, like back to the baby teeth connection. Right? Like... Not to get too much into it, because it's pure speculation and will probably be repudiated, but they must be rival factions to both, like, the Way and
the Silhouette.
The Silhouette, right?
Yep.
You know, like one of those factions wants maybe the world to end, the other wants the world to survive, and Black Eyed Kids are like, we want everybody to die, but it has to go to, like, continue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like tantalized by what that could be. So
yep.
Hopefully they maybe, you know, pick it up at some point.
Yep. Agreed. All right. So let's tamo it up. Now, you know what? Let's talk about this brief letter at the end from Joe.
Okay.
I think we kind of discussed most of the points, but pretty much what he says is this is the end of season one, the first 15 issues, and he wants to do more. And I've talked to Joe at cons and stuff. He loves doing this book. He really, really enjoys it. But you know, he is the publisher of the company. And, you know, just because he started the company doesn't mean that he can do whatever he wants, right? Ultimately, a comic book company has to make money, and if there's not enough people buying this book, I get why it's going away. But he talks a little bit about the next trade, which will have the last five issues of the book, comes out in March. So if you're listening to this, go and pre-order it if you want more Black Eyed Kids. But that's pretty much where he's going. You know, the book's been doing really well in trade, but in terms of single issues, it doesn't do very well. And I've seen the numbers for this. I mean, it does like less than half of what like Baby Teeth is doing. Sometimes less. And I don't know. It's kind of sad. Like, I get that it's not a book for everybody, but you know, like, sometimes it's hard to find a book that really hits you in a particular way. And Baby Teeth or Black Eyed Kids for some reason just really hit me in a particular way, where it encompasses a lot of things that I really like, and that I don't normally see in comics. Definitely not in mainstream comics, but you know, like even from indie publishers, I don't see a lot of this type of story. So that's what led me to it. And I hope that for those of you listening that do enjoy the book, that you will also take some time to share it with other people, in the hopes that selfishly, maybe we get it back. And like I mentioned at the beginning, we got a shout out in this letter. So thanks, Joe. I mean, Joe's freaking awesome. Aftershocks Ninja Podcast got a shout out for supporting the book. And I think with good reason. So yeah.
Yeah, this was one of the first Aftershock books that I picked up because you recommended it when I asked you when it was on sale. So, yeah, you've been repping it for a long time.
Yeah, I even recommend this to people that don't like horror-type books. I mean, it's not – like, I don't think it's what a lot of people maybe define as horror. But I think – it's what I feel is most like a classic horror story. I think I've talked about this elsewhere, but you know, a lot of people are just so used to horror being like, Saw or like Human Centipede or like, you know, crazy, what I call horror porn. It's not scary. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just gratuitous blood and violence. And I think what Black Eyed Kids does for the horror genre is more true to something like what Hitchcock would have done in film. So,
right. Yeah, it's more suspenseful. It's not really that, you know, comparatively. Mm-hmm. It's all about suspense and it's creepy.
Yep.
Yeah, I just, you know, like, it's a slow burn, you know? Like they really rolled it out and they didn't indicate where it was going.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I definitely would like it to continue, and I think be disappointed if it ended here, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a lot of questions about where it was headed.
Yep. Agreed. You want to tamo this one up?
Yeah, I'll go, 4 out of 5, drinking the Kool-Aid tamos.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with, 4 out of 5. You could never have enough hoodies, Tamos. Alright, let's go to the next one. We've got, man, there's a lot of books. We can't take a week off, man. Holy crap.
That's my fault, dude. I draw these things out, which.
Animosity Evolution number 3 is the next book. And, this is written by Marguerite Bennett. Art by Eric Gapster. Colors by Rob Swaggy P. Schwager, and letters by Marshall Dillon. Alright, so nutshell this one.
Oh, this is the one that I didn't prepare a nutshell for.
Oh, my bad. I thought you had said Baby Teeth. Alright, so I'll nutshell it up real quick. You know what? I'm not even gonna nutshell it. There's a lot happening here. There's an animal that's, arrested for, murder. It turns out that, he didn't murder anybody.
Wait, that's Animosity.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Oh, sorry, I thought we were talking about Baby Teeth.
No, we'll do Baby Teeth last.
Oh, I can do Animosity. Okay, sorry.
good.
All right, yeah, that's my bad. Okay, nutshell for Animosity. After the attack in the last issue, the cops are questioning Maya, and she offers to testify to avoid execution. They hide her in Adam North's place, where Deacon the Ram is caught in the crossfire of an apparent assassination. Investigation suggests that Deacon was actually the real target.
Dun, dun, dun. That's pretty good. It's a lot simpler than I was going to make it.
I mean, it's not really obvious, like, kind of until the end where it was going, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. So let me ask you, let me start off with this. Did you know what kind of animal Mia was?
It seems to be a bat, right? Like, so, a different kind of bat.
All right, so that's what I thought the entire issue. But at the end of the issue, we find out that it's a minx.
What? Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I can't remember who it was. It might have been Kikiriki. No, it wasn't Kikiriki. It was the little mouse. What's the mouse's name? But at the end, Julia, she says something about Mia the minx. Now it's like, oh, a minx. Okay. Cause I was trying to figure it out because it, to me, it looked like a bat and I was getting really confused in a lot of places. Because like Kikiriki's there and Mia's there and sometimes they look very similar. But like I keep looking at Mia, and I mean, doesn't she have bat wings?
No, I mean, like couldn't that just be like a turn of phrase? You know, I really thought this was a bat, like a different kind of bat than Kikiriki.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I gotta find the line, because I swear they called Mia the minx. Unless, like, is there an alternate meaning for minx?
Well, dude, they use the word minx in, like, Austin Powers.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, no, actually, no, right? So I believe there is a reference to Mia breaking one of the mouse's hearts, right?
That's right.
And so minx in that sense maybe means, like, a heartbreaker or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, okay, now that you makes know, sense.
Some a charmer.
Now that makes sense. All right, so yeah. We can go back to Mia the bat of some sort.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Okay, so yeah, like what's going on with her, right? Because, like, A, she's talking a lot of trash right now, and at times has suggested she's got information on Kikiriki, but also kind of vague, unstipulated other criminal enterprises or whatever. Like, she's going to roll on to save her skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so is she just full of it? Does she know anything about anybody? Or... is she just kind of trying to say whatever she can at any time to save herself?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the impression that I got. Now, I have no doubt that Mia knows stuff. But when I say no, I put that in quotes. Because I wonder how much of the stuff that she knows is more like hearsay. That she's picked up from hanging out with, like, the criminal crowd, you know what I mean? Cause like, you know, towards the end of the story, we have the cow, she goes to that, like, speakeasy kind of place. And I wonder if that's not like, I mean, that's a place that Mia would frequent, right? And I'm sure, like, Mia would hear all these stories about all these people. Because after the murder attempt, Mia takes back a lot of the stuff that she said, and kind of wants protection because she doesn't know anything. And like, it seems like she wouldn't want to convince the law that she didn't do anything because they're protecting her if she does, you know?
Yeah, dude, if she has no info, like I think like there's a moment after the assassination attempt where she's like, You could make the case that she gets scared. She thinks that they're coming after her, and she's like, I don't know anything. Like, I can't testify. You know, like, I was lying. Don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. When really, she does know something. And, you know, it's conceivable that she's, like, maybe a significant smuggler into the city. So she knows stuff about, you know, like the black market and smuggling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whether or not that is really important for you know, the government to get a handle on in this investigation, you know, like, I don't know. But yeah, certainly the cops and government have no need to protect her if she doesn't know anything, so she kind of is taking her chances with whoever is out there. They're not necessarily going to believe she didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know, man.
Okay.
It seems weird.
Okay, another thing about Mia, right? Or Mia. I was wondering about in the previous issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
there's a scene where she delivers the mice to the snake or whatever, and she's got this payment that's wrapped up, and we don't see what it is, but she's, like, freaking out about it. And she's basically like, this may be the last one ever, you know? Hmm. Like, something about it is, like, super valuable and alluring. Maybe there's something there that might get picked up again. Mm-hmm. Like something she might know that could actually be valuable. But just curious about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. To be honest, I have no idea. I mean, there's got to be more to her side of the story there, right? Because I don't know if we would have so much focus on her in this issue if that wasn't the case.
Yeah, I mean, unless it's a means to an end or something, you know. Hopefully it's going to pay off.
Yeah,
but
I don't know about that, man, because it seems like both with this book and the regular Animosity title, it seems pretty obvious to me that every single thing that happens in these books in the Animosity world means something for the overall story. At least that's been the case since the first Animosity book started. So I don't think this particular like Maya's story would be a throwaway thing. I mean, I wouldn't want it to end up being that, yeah, Maya did do something. I would much rather it be that Maya didn't do something, but that lead to a larger piece of the puzzle. Because I think, like, the, you know, letting the villain get away, and then you find out that it's really the villain, and then you get them back, that's kind of, it's a little tropey. And I don't think Marguerite is that kind of writer that would exploit a trope like that. But I don't know. I just think that the book's so strong that I wouldn't want to see, like, a typical comic book trope be put into this particular title.
Okay, yeah, I agree. It's definitely been strong and unpredictable so far. So let me ask you, though, another, I think, significant question that we're looking at in terms of going forward is, you know, assuming Deacon the Ram was the target,
mm-hmm.
why was he killed?
Well, I mean, that's a little too early for that. My assumption is that it has to do with this Animata program, because that seems to play pretty heavy on the whole issue. And then you've got that one animal at the end, which I was trying to figure out what it was, and I've got an idea, but it doesn't quite look like it. Anyway.
Seems like a turtle.
Yeah, so I looked it up, and it's like a pig-nosed turtle, but pig-nosed turtles have, their feet look like flippers. And that thing had, like, actual turtle feet.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an Animata, though. That's interesting.
Yeah, but it's an Animata. Which, that whole thing is just so odd. Because I guess it started with, what's the fox's name that's in charge? I keep forgetting her name. They mentioned
it. Wintermute?
Yeah, Wintermute. It started with her right after the attack. But
possibly?
Well, yeah, I guess maybe somebody had to be developing beforehand, right?
Yeah, I don't know if it's specific about that she was the first, but she certainly is the first that we see.
Yeah. And yeah. Now it seems like she's trying to make it more commonplace.
Well, a lot of them seem like they were kind of like treatment for injury,
mm-hmm.
you know? I think it was only one of them was like, oh, no, I signed up for this.
Yeah, the dog.
Yeah, so, like, I think that makes sense in terms of kind of, like, getting people to sign up for it if it's, like, super experimental.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that it's an interesting idea, you know, certainly, like the title is, you know, Animosity Evolution, right? So,
right.
Like, so that's the evolution in the series. I think it's safe to say is, like, oh, snap, like, animals are using technological enhancements to become more human.
Hmm.
But what's the end game, you know? Like, are they trying to take over, or are they trying to kind of just, like, take an equal place at the table?
Yeah, and that was brought up in this book as well. 'Cause there's a section where there's a couple animals talking, and one of them's like, well, you know, you were a domestic animal, So when all the animals gained consciousness, you lost something. But I was a wild animal, and we kind of moved like way up the chain by becoming conscious. And looking at the animals that are joining this animata, it almost seems like they're all domesticated animals, right? Because you got the cat, the goat, and the dog.
Yeah.
So is this going to end up being like a two factions of animals thing, where you have like wild animals versus domesticated animals? Because maybe the domesticated animals feel like, well, we didn't really gain anything because we had it super easy, and now we have to bust our ass to live. You know, before all we had to do was get up and go to the food bowl, get food, and go to sleep. And now we're all starving, can't reproduce. Like, yeah, it's kind of shitty for domesticated animals, I would say.
Yeah. Well, interesting thing about that is, like, seems like if any single person is responsible for their development, it is like the fox doctor. You know, like there's like two snow foxes or something. One of them's a doctor.
Yep.
Has been overseeing all of the procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't think that that's domesticated per se.
Yeah, but that's the doctor. I see what you're saying.
But that's the, you know, like that's not certainly conclusive. You know, like they could buy in or whatever. That is certainly, I think, one of the really interesting things about the series. You know, like I think that relationship between domestic animals and wild animals kind of, not to like wade into controversial territory, but it's kind of like, you know, house slaves versus like field slaves or something. Yeah, you know. Yeah. And to kind of burn that analogy a little bit further, like I think the series really speaks to in general is like humans in a scenario where animals have equal sentience, basically they're guilty of slavery and genocide. That's like part and parcel with the human existence, which is like super like controversial, you know, like on its face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a lot of PETA people out there who say that stuff right now.
Right. Yeah, I think that's come up before. I think that's why this book can get away with certain things without appearing preachy per se. Because these aren't humans or people interacting. It's animals, with human characteristics. And I think for people, it makes it easier to stomach the fact that we are far from perfect, when you're not seeing yourself do these odd and awful things. I mean, and don't get me wrong, there's awful humans in these books. But it seems like a lot of, especially with evolution, a lot of the focus is on how the animals interact. You know, it's like Animal Farm, right? Animal Farm is about socialism and pretty much the food chain within society, but it's told with animals instead of people. And so you're able to say certain things that maybe would not fly, just because these aren't people that you're using as characters.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
Gives a little bit more freedom.
Yeah. Yep. What else? A little speakeasy place that, I mean, I like that. I want more issues in that place. The little animal cantina at the end.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely kind of suggests like a new environment, a new world we haven't seen before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I like a cow in evening wear, so that is interesting, right? It's like that the animals dress up.
Yeah, I thought that was odd.
They don't really dress up in general, do they?
No, it seems like just in this place.
So they're not recognized.
I mean, do you think that's what it is? Because it's like a seedy place, and they don't want to be seen.
I would assume it's probably something for status, you know. But it's definitely part of the like price for admission, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess. And I mean, well, like the animals don't use their real names, so yeah, I guess the clothing thing makes sense also to hide your personality.
Yeah, this cow, though, makes friends pretty quick, right?
Well, she's obviously been here before.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, so she's been in town 2-3 weeks, something, you know, like maybe a month. Her calf is only a couple weeks mm-hmm. old. But I guess that milk is just in such, like, high demand that, like, any new cow on the scene is like, hey, baby, like, mm-hmm. your credit's good here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny, though, because there's so much about the animals wanting to be human in here. Like, when the cow and the mouse are talking about, like, what they should order, the mouse is like, Moscato? And the cow's like, Moscato? And she's like, yeah, like, we found all these books, and in all the books, the women are always drinking Moscato. And I found that pretty humorous, you know, because these animals gain consciousness, but, like, they don't really know what that means, I guess, in some respects. And they're trying to find out what it is to be conscious. And for a lot of these animals, it's just, you know, what were the humans doing? Because they're conscious. Let's just kind of imitate that. And maybe that explains some of this clothing thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely impressive. Like, did somebody sit down and teach the mice to read? Because... You know, like, yeah, it's like they all the animals only know, I don't want to say English, but like what are they communicating mentally? I don't mean to derail the discussion, but on a basic premise level, are they talking out loud?
I assume that they were.
They learned all of language, so that's impressive. Maybe the mice learned how to read instantly also. Like, That's definitely, like, a good day.
Sure.
That's like, a lot to handle at once.
Oh, man. What else you got for this one?
Like, big premise, dude. Like, is anybody, like, wondering about, like, what caused the wake in the first place?
It doesn't seem like they are in this one. They're diving into some of that stuff in the other Animosity book. But it's almost like, I don't know if it matters, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, it seems, to me at least, whenever you have one of these post-apocalyptic stories, I find it more interesting to learn about how these people interact than how it is that we got to this place. And I think if we start spending too much time on why this happened, it ultimately takes away from the story that's actually being told.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Yeah, I wonder about these technical issues.
just assume that they all have like, you know, transponders or whatever, universal communicators. It just translates automatically.
Yeah, and maybe if there were like illiterate humans, like they picked up how to read just like as a bonus, you know, like mm-hmm. level the playing field a little bit.
There you go. All right, let's tame it up.
All right, so I'm going to go 4.25 out of 5 cow in a dress toast.
Oh, you stole my Tamos.
It happens.
Oh, man. Now I got to scramble. I'll just go with I'm going to go with a 4.133333 dolphin meat Tamos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, That's a shocking thing to put on a cover, by the way. Especially, yeah, like we're talking about animal rights and whatnot, you know? Mm-hmm. Commercial dolphin meat on sale. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty on the nose.
Yeah.
I like it.
I loved it. All right, last book. We've got Baby Teeth, number 7. This is Donnie Cates writing, Gary Brown on art, Mark Englert on colors, and Taylor Esposito on letters. So this is the one that you didn't have a recap on.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do a quick recap. It turns out that Sadie and Clark were not the first. We have some tender moments as Clark is reunited with her mom. We find out that maybe there's something about her lineage after all. And finally, the silhouette go bye-bye. That's it. That's all I got.
That's pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. So where do you want to start?
I mean, I think we should just start from the beginning. I think that makes the most sense.
That's a very good place to start.
Which, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter really, because the beginning of this issue is a flashback to something that gets discussed again at the end of the issue. But the fact that we learn that Sadie isn't the first, I thought was really interesting.
Well, they had set that up, actually, right? And maybe in issue one or two, they mentioned what they said it like an Arab girl.
Yeah, right.
What I think is interesting is, you know, like, unless I'm kind of getting it wrong, the coyote or whatever, this was like the last mission that he did for the Silhouette, and it happens 15 years ago.
Correct.
And it was traumatic enough that he's like, I'm out forever. You know, so on some level, it begs the question, what missions exactly was he doing for the Silhouette before this? And it also kind of begs the question of what was the, you know, the objectives of this issue, where he was like, at this point, we were still trying to recover the baby alive, you know? Clearly, they stopped doing that after this mission. So what were they planning to do with the baby while that was happening? And I think you have to ask, you know, how many times has this scenario popped up since this incident? You know, is this actually the first time since 15 years ago that this has happened?
Well, and not just that, has it happened before this incident? Because it seems to me like, it seems to me like the Way and the Silhouette are both kind of like very old organizations, right? Like they didn't just pop up, and if they were hunting this one girl and she got away, obviously not at the hands of the Silhouette, and the question really becomes kind of how she was taken away. I want to come back to that in a second. But like the Silhouette's very powerful. They've got these teams they're sending out. Before Sadie, they were not killing the kid. So what was it doing with the kids? Like, they weren't raising them to not be the Antichrist, right? That doesn't make sense either.
It's unclear, sure.
So I think that brings up a lot of questions. But I mean, ultimately, I don't know. That was a little confusing, because with the events of this issue, the Silhouette is no longer around. So, you know, they were kind of played off as the villains so far. But maybe as it turns out, the Silhouette maybe aren't the bad guys after all.
It's definitely morally gray, you know, like I think that's been obviously the most fun thing about this series is that you kind of, you know, you flip the script so that like the demonic camp are the protagonists. Mm-hmm. And like, there's precedent, like arguably in, say, Spawn or Witchblade, where like the side of the angels is equally, if not more so, like scary and like ruthless, whatever. Mm. You know, like however we want to, you know, describe it. You know, so there's that kind of like flipping the moral scripts. There's also, if you're looking at something maybe that's a little bit more gray, like the argument of, you know, sacrificing a baby, if not innocent, you know, to save the world, you know. Mm-hmm. It's the would you kill baby Hitler discussion, you know. Right. And, you know, it's tough to answer a question like that.
Hmm. Yeah, I guess so. So when this girl gets taken away, there's a portal opens up behind her, and then all these tentacles pop out, and she gets sucked into this portal with the baby. What is this tentacle monster?
Well, okay. So interestingly, you know, what I took from that is that when the demon baby screams, like a magic scream,
mm-hmm.
that it opens up a portal. Which we saw borne out when it, you know, like, Demon Raccoon fought from the sky, right?
Yes, right.
And arguably, again, when they're on the plane, you know? Like, if we assume that the demon wasn't just hanging on, the raccoon wasn't, like, on the plane the whole time, it's possible Clark just cries and then, bam, raccoon shows up.
Mm-hmm.
These don't appear to be the raccoon.
Right.
So, it's tough to say, but, you know, going further into that, like, not necessarily just what is this creature, but, like, where does she go, you know? And, like, if that is at all connected to the powers that are in the child, and like does not like the forces of evil or darkness already have the Antichrist?
Mm.
You know, she goes off the grid and we never hear from him.
Right.
So maybe she'll pop up.
Well, and does this lead to maybe a third faction of the Silhouettes gone? You know, you brought this up earlier when we were talking about Black Eyed Kids, and I'm not talking about like Black Eyed Kids being the third faction, but is there a third faction? And I don't know, like whoever this is, the Clark's like true father, right? Whatever, like demon father. Because obviously the raccoon seems to be there to protect them. So somebody's got to be guiding the raccoon to do this job, right? But we haven't seen much of the raccoon at all, so we don't know like anything about that character.
Yeah, it's still TBD, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in this issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we're starting to see little glimpses of Christine, Sadie's mom.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So a lot of revelations there.
Jamie Lee Curtis,
yes.
let's talk about that.
Father.
Well, I mean, it's not who she thinks it is. We know that.
Yeah, it's not. And I'm assuming for narrative purposes that Heather's father is the captain.
Yeah, that's my assumption.
And that Sadie's father is the mystery guest, and that is connected with setting up somebody who is going to bear the Antichrist. Devil's Advocate ever saw that.
Yes.
So there's some precedent there.
Well, maybe Sadie's father is the Cthulhu monster.
Hmm. They are in Maine.
Well, yes. By the way, that was my favorite panel. Was it last issue there was a panel like that too?
I think it's been the last two issues.
Yeah, last two issues, right? Yeah, this one was just like Maine. Ugh, the worst. I loved it. I had to share it with Paul.
Yeah, shout out to Paul. He's not listening.
He's not. He doesn't listen to any podcast. But shout out to him anyway. Yeah. Who is Sadie's father? Because that comes up when Clark is quote unquote hungry. That's what Sadie assumes. And her mom, by the way, I like that one scene because they're all like ganging up on Heather because she's trying to help her dad out, and the baby just yells and they all just bow down and everything quits. But anyways, you then get some time between Sadie and her mom, and her mom's got the baby bottle of blood, and Sadie's like, yeah, that's not going to work. You know, like we try that with Heather's blood. And that's when you find out that her and Heather aren't related. Well, I guess they're half sisters maybe. And she kind of explains about this blood that, it's partially her mom's blood and partially other relatives' bloods.
Yeah, like she's got other relatives in the commune or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, what's the deal with that? How many relatives does she have there, and how closely are they related? And I was also curious about how many other communities there are.
Hmm.
Because I thought I picked up that they hinted that there might be others, you know, especially when they're kind of like, we see the silhouette looking at the schematics and stuff, and they're like, well, this community is here, and it looks like this.
Well, I assume that was where they are now, where Sadie is now.
Yeah, I just thought that I got the sense that there might be other communities that are like this out there, just like in case. Like, they might be seeding them all over the world or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's possible, because I can't remember the girl's name. The other girl that we saw in the flashback. She was in Canada.
Yeah, shout out to Christian Calgary.
There you go. she was in Canada, so maybe there's a commune there. And we don't know if maybe these girls with... demonic Antichrist babies are popping up all over the world. Because that's the only girl that we've seen aside from Sadie. But could be possible.
Yeah, it's definitely vague how many kind of iterations there have been between the episode that we see in the beginning of the series and, like, the Sadie events, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see about that, I guess.
Well, and you know, maybe what it is maybe it's just all these demons having babies so they can cross over into our world. But maybe Clark is special. Maybe Clark is just like the head baby demon.
Yeah, I have to assume that the baby we see in the beginning of the issue will come back in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it's a question of who has him and like what's going on with that, you mm-hmm. know? So it's kind of maybe a lot of speculation at this point.
Yeah. Yep. And then I guess finally we've got Coyote murders all of the Silhouette. And I liked the way he did it too. Because he let them talk. He let them send them a bunch of money, which I guess he didn't really give a shit about that anyway. But then he just kind of started opening fire on them. He brings out these automatic machine guns that start spraying everybody. And really, it has me more curious than ever as to what the hell the Silhouette is. Because I assumed that the Silhouette was kind of like, I don't know, like the human anti-demonic invasion sect, you know? Whereas the Way wants all this to happen. And now with the Silhouette gone, man, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, the Silhouette, I feel is kind of ambiguous about whether it's primarily like a religious organization or a government organization.
Mm-hmm.
Like it reads, presents a little bit more like government, you know, they're not wearing, you would consider like recognizable religious attire.
Mm-hmm.
But in a story about, you know, the devil and other forces, you would expect that, you know, the side fighting against them would be affiliated with the church or, you know.
Yes.
So maybe that, I mean, I guess it's a little more interesting if it is a pure government organization. You know, maybe that's kind of more like Hellboy type territory or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, could be. And these guys certainly seem human, so I don't know. I mean, I think anything we say is kind of pure conjecture, so I'm not even going to say anything anymore.
Well, let me ask you this, all right? Mm-hmm. So Coyote, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that he knows when they're talking to him that they're lying about, like they know who really killed his daughter? And, you know, they're like, hey, it was this baby, so you should probably kill him. Like, I wonder if that enters into the equation at all, or whether he was just like, I have been waiting for a chance to ice you clowns for the last 15 years because of that baby that you didn't make me not kill. Like, right? Like, he seems pretty traumatized, and he didn't even kill the baby.
Yeah. Well, but they weren't killing the baby before that, right?
Oh, maybe they were killing the baby, but that was the first time baby went in a tentacle portal. And he's like, that's too much. That's,
Yeah, I can't deal with the baby portals.
We can't be having these tentacles here. Like, I'll kill him, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, ultimately, I mean, technically, the Silhouette did kill his daughter because they gave her the contract. But I don't, it's just kind of weird. I don't know if I can get into this guy's head and figure out his logic, you know? Maybe it's just one of those things where I should assume that, like, he just thinks differently. I don't even know how to explain it, man. But I mean, his daughter got killed, so he's pissed, right? He needs to find some kind of release. And it seems like right now the blame he can put on the Silhouette to make him feel better temporarily. And maybe he's just tired of these groups going back and forth with each other. And, you know, that's why he wants to help Sadie. You know, he realized kind of what the stakes were with this last girl. And he doesn't want that to continue for anybody.
Yeah, I'll buy that. Like, he's not done right now, right?
Right, right. And I mean, he said he's going to protect Sadie, so we'll see. We'll see what that means.
Yeah, well, he shouldn't have any problem with that. Like,
No, he's pretty badass, dude.
Yeah.
He is pretty badass. All right, let's wrap this one up.
Word?
You got a Tamo? Right?
Yeah, I'm going to go, and I'm going to censor it because I don't want hate mail. 5 out of 5, suck my DB Tamos.
Yeah, I'm with you. 5 out of 5, bullet to the head Tamos.
Lots of bullets to the head.
Lots of bullets to the head.
It's all headshots.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. Man, this was a long episode. Holy moly.
Yeah, too many issues.
Woo! Well, I mean, I'm looking at the schedule now, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but according to Comixology, there's 4 books next week as well.
I think I saw that too.
Is that right?
Yeah.
God, I hope that's not right. I mean, I do, but I don't. Let's see. Monster Mechanica number 2, Alters number 9, Jimmy's Bastards number 6, and Pestilence number 6. Man, oh man. I think that's the last issue for Pestilence too, so I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, it'll be a good week.
Yep.
Alters has one more or two?
Two more, I think, right? 10's the last one?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Which that's too bad because I love that book. All right, we're going to wrap it up. If you want to get in touch with us, Twitter's the best place for most of us. Ronnie, who's a slacker and apparently had to do stuff at work, I don't know. He's a liar. He's fired from this podcast. He's at Rombar316. Travis is my new permanent host. He's at The Great Magnet. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. And AftershockCentral@gmail.com is the email address. And that's it. We'll be back next week. Have a good one.